Herzlich willkommen, liebe Beachvolleyball-Welt, zu dieser Folge Maximum Beachvolleyball. Mein Name ist Max Behlen, ich befinde mich gerade in Kiel und heute, ich habe es schon oft gesagt, aber heute ist es wirklich ein ganz besonderer Gast und diese Folge übertrifft eigentlich nochmal alles, was ihr bisher so gehört habt in diesem Podcast, denn heute ist niemand anderes als Anders Mohl, der amtierende Olympiasieger, Europameister, Rekord-Europameister und aktuell wahrscheinlich der beste Spieler der Welt zu Gast. Die Geschichte, wie dieser Ausnahmespieler und auch das Projekt Beachvolley Vikings entstanden ist, ist wirklich einzigartig und hört ihr das erste Mal in voller Länge hier in dieser Podcast-Folge. Natürlich ist das Ganze auf Englisch aufgenommen. Anders Deutsch war nicht ganz ausreichend für eine Podcast-Aufnahme und ich wünsche euch in diesem Sinne ganz, ganz viel Spaß mit dieser Episode.
German fans in there, loving this atmosphere. And the German fans are on their feet.
Hi Anders, how are you doing and where are you at right now?
Hello, I'm in Norway in Kristiansand right now, at home. We just came back from Tenerife, had 2 weeks there with the training camp. So now it's just a week of recovery and then we're going back there the 8th of February.
So just for this week you have just chilling out and recovering and then you're going right back?
Yeah, and I'm doing weights, so focusing more on weights this week, and then we go back and do some more ball sessions in Tenerife with the rest of the team.
How was Tenerife? I saw the beginnings were quite windy, but yeah, that went down a little bit then?
Yeah, it was really windy in the start, and it was like the Kalima from Africa came in, so it was really, really windy, and also kind of cold,
really?
Very strange conditions in Tenerife, but then it went 1 week and that was it was perfect. So yeah, hopefully we can start off better next time.
And how does the ball touch feel? Is it back or is it still hard to play right now?
No.
When was the last tournament? In November something? October?
Well, the last tournament for us was in Sardinia. So that was October, no?
October, yeah.
I think. But yeah, it's like biking. You know, it's...
for you.
It's like we never stopped practice. So it was actually quite good. Surprisingly good. I think our coach was really surprised by the level that we had.
Very good. And did you only train with your group? Like I saw all the Vikings were there. You took Marcus, you took Niels, or did you practice with other people as well?
We were mostly with Team Norway, yeah. Now we have like 8 players, so we're a big group. That's nice. But we also practiced with Russia one day and also with the Czech one day. So there is a lot of great teams there. So I think next time there will be even more sparring with, I think Qatar is also coming and Switzerland, Sweden, I don't know, but there's a lot of good teams there. So
yeah, sounds like good conditions also. I guess while you were there, you were also probably talking a lot about the upcoming Pro Tour and the new calendar release that came out. And yeah, what were your initial thoughts about this overall topic?
Well, the first thoughts are that the new concept and the new tour and the way the tour is shaped right now is that 80% of the players won't have anything. They won't have a job this summer. So it's a really, really tricky situation for the FOEB to now also launch a lot of challenger events in the summer, because the way that the calendar is shaped right now is not good for the sport at all. For the best players in the world, yes, it's a good calendar, but that doesn't matter because we need to we need to have a change. Like, we need to have a balanced system, and right now it's not. So, and also a fair system. So hopefully we can push the FOEB to do a better job with the calendar for the most teams in the world.
But for you right now, personally, it isn't that bad because you obviously sit comfortably in the Elite 16 tournament. But do you nonetheless like engage with the FIVB and advocate for the other tournaments? Or do you sit back like, okay, for me, it's good right now?
No, we do it through the IBBPA, which is the Players Association, because all the players there are also very disappointed about the new calendar. So we're united and we're talking with the FOEB through the leaders of the IBBPA. So that's what's happening right now, that players are going in towards the FOEB together and trying to get a change, because like it might be good for us, but if it's not good for the rest of the players, then it's not good for the sport, and then we might even not have opponents for the next coming years because people have to retire. So it's we have to stick together during this period, because it's difficult, but it's also difficult to host tournaments because of Omicron and stuff like this. But hopefully we'll get back, and I think this new change with the new Beach Pro Tour might be good, but it needs to be done in the right way.
Sure. All right, so about this whole concept, if it were to work, if there were tournaments, it would affect you guys pretty much because of the whole Beach Volley Vikings construct. You wouldn't really be able to travel together and stuff like that, because tournaments are not at the same place and time, right?
Yeah, so that's also a shame that we can't be together like we have been before, and not play the same tournaments, the same locations. So that's a bummer, and I think also for the rookies out there, it's sad that they can't watch their idols, and also for us to see the future coming in and maybe winning some more games and taking the step to the senior level is also fun for us, but especially like for the youth not being able to learn and see the stars play, that's also bad. So yeah, I don't know, it's pros and cons with this new format.
They can watch the stream and on TV then, but it's not the same, of course.
Well, yeah, true, but hopefully the whole product will be a lot better, and there is a lot of professional people working on this project that has been coming from big brands, and I think they will really try to do really well, or try to take beach volleyball to the next step where it's actually deserved, like because beach volleyball has a really big potential, and to reach out to a lot more people than we do today. So it's a really good product, but right now it's just not been doing, or it's not been done in the right way. Now I think we might see a change.
Let's see how this develops, and then hopefully at least next year we'll have a good and complete product. So we'll just watch that. So let's talk about you for a little bit. I wanna look in your past a little bit before we come to the present and the last year and so on. It would be like, we don't have to ask you why you picked up volleyball. That's pretty clear, probably, because it's a kind of a volleyball family. But let's talk about the beginnings and when you and your family moved to Sund. Why was that? And how old were you? What were you doing? And so on.
So me and my family, we moved to Sund, Topoli, Norway, when I was in the ninth grade. So it was actually in the middle of the year. So in the winter, we moved to Sund. So it was in the middle of the school year, which was also a little tough. But the reason why we did it was also was because we, mom and dad, they got jobs at Sun, this Topoli school. I also really wanted to train, but it wasn't because of me. It was more because mom and dad had, they had jobs there and they wanted to be closer also to Hendrik, to follow him. And,
Hendrik was already there going to school and going to Topoli.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So then I also got the chance to practice with the first graders of Topoli Norway, which was a really great opportunity for me. I was really short. I was really small at that time. I hadn't even reached puberty. So I was, really a rookie. But I had some technical skills, so I could kind of follow them a little bit. But I was, I was really lucky to be a part of that group. And almost every day I was training with them. So I kind of pre-started Topoli half a year before.
So half a year, but then you were going to the like normal school that's next to it, mm-hmm. and then but practicing with the Topoli students already.
Yeah, I went practicing in the morning together with them, like the morning session, and then I went to school, and then I maybe went in the indoor beach volleyball gym that they had and did some things with myself, and then that's all.
And that probably helped a lot to get like an early start a little bit and having the opportunity to practice with them.
For sure. And also to learn from the best there. Like I also had my idols at that school. For example, Kristin. He was also a student at Topoli those first years. And I was actually able to practice with them, with that group early on. So I was lucky.
And talk a little bit more about your body condition then. How tall were you and how much did you weigh back then before puberty hit?
Well, I was I can't really remember, but I was like maybe 170 175 around that, I was skinny. I was really skinny, and maybe like Marcus, my younger brother now. It was tough times. It was difficult for me to even spike above the net. I had to like always spike upwards.
Yeah.
And I was more like a setter, than a spiker. Yeah. It was, but it was really fun also to, I had to really be technical in this age, to compensate for my height and for my physique because, I didn't have those physical skills. So then I had to become really, really good, technically. And I think I could handle the ball quite well. And I have for sure like taken that with me now. And I can still use my technique and physique at the same time. So that shaped me a lot.
Yeah, sure. It's not like, it's not uncommon for, people that grow late to develop more technical skill. So that's a story I hear a lot.
Yeah. So it's actually a benefit. I see like to grow, to have a late bloom.
And did you like when you started at Topoli and before and you were, really skinny and small, did you already have in mind that, okay, I want to be a pro. I want to do this. Or did that just like come and, came along the way?
No, I had big dreams from an early age. I wanted to become the best player. I don't know when I said that to myself, but it was quite early. And I remember now just going back to my, notes. Was it? I think, 2014. Okay. I wrote in my notes on my phone that I want to become a legend in the sport.
Wow.
And that's very unusual. And I want to take many Olympic gold medals. I want to take many world championship titles and win the European championship and blah, blah, blah. So I had really like high hopes for myself and high goals. But I didn't know that was going to be the reality, like that we actually have won the Olympics and we have now four European titles. Like, but I had a really big dream. And I think that also really motivated me and Like I was just going to do this. So, like there was no like what else should I do? I had nothing else. Volleyball has been like I've been in a tunnel with volleyball for such a long time.
Well, that's pretty unbelievable, actually. Yeah. that you already dreamt that big.
Yeah, it's early crazy. Stage. I don't know. I think I was like 12, 13 when I really like went for it and said like, this is what I'm going to do. And I also believe in myself. I think I'm going to be a good player. And I think also my parents, they also let me believe that, yeah, you can be as good as you want. And that also helped me a lot because they also knew what it took to become a good volleyball player. So I believed in them, and then I tried to, of course, work hard.
That's a pretty good story. You could go around like as a inspirational, motivational speaker with that, I guess. after the career, you can tell other kids about this, and they will be very motivated, I guess. But you had, as I remember, or if I remember correctly, through your top volley years, you also had to fight through some injuries. Mm-hmm. Right, and weren't always able to play at that level or even play at all.
Yeah, that's true. I had I had a knee injury when we played. We qualified for the World Tour in Stavanger in the main draw, which was also a crazy experience to be able to play on home court. And I was 16, and Matthias was 18. Yeah. But in the first game there, I like heard a click in my knee, and like later on, it was my I have Schlatters in my knee, and it was like a piece of bone that kind of got ripped away from the Schlatters. That was the acute thing, and they didn't find out before a year after. Like what happened with the knee, and I just went around and had really pain in my knee for a long time, and it got swollen all the time when I started practicing. So the whole second year at Topoli, I was only lifting weights because that was the only thing I could do for my upper body and for my core. I couldn't really do that much on my knees. And then I had a surgery. And had to like pick this bone away from the patella because it has had like grown together. And after that, it took 3-4 months before I was able to really practice again. And then at that time, my left quad was a lot bigger than the right because I had always been compensating. I spent the whole second year just lifting a lot of weights, and I think that also helped me a lot because when I got back, I was a lot stronger and a lot better than when I was when I got injured. I also had grown like a couple of centimeters, so it was a shock for me to come back and like, wow, it's actually easier to play now, and I feel a lot stronger. I feel better, and I also used that time to do a lot of technical shots, just stand in the sand and work on.
So you did some ball training also?
Yeah. I also did some setting because I could do that. So I tried to do whatever I could do without getting worse in my knee. And that was actually quite a lot. I just had to be creative. And I think that's also really important for those who are through or going through injury, that they see what they can do with the situation to become a better player when you get back, because that's always possible.
Yeah, just don't like miss every training because you can't fully participate, but do whatever you can do.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Super important.
And now Top Volley still is, of course, a little part in your life because you always come back there. Your brother and Matthias also work there part of the time. So what does Top Volley mean for you now and coming back to that place all the time?
Well, it means a lot. Top Volley shaped me and have shaped so many players throughout the years. And it's such a great community, and just to be there and see all the motivated kids going through school and going through every training, it's really, really nice to have such a good cooperation with them. We have been there a lot to train in the beach gym, and it's just nice to sit down with the students and hear what they're doing and how their training every day is and how they like it at Top Volley. And it's such a special community with beach volleyball or volleyball players coming together in one place, and they live together for 3 years. They go to school, they eat, they train together, and it creates a really special relationship. So the friends, like most of the friends I have today, is through that school. And it's like brothers and sisters still today. So it's amazing.
And also a lot of the kids there told me that, like, you are their idol. They look up to you and they get motivated by what you have achieved. What does that, or did you hear that also? And what does that do with you?
Well, it for sure means a lot. And I also had my idols when I was at Top Volley. And I had Kristen, for example, as my idol. And he was just 2 years older than me, and I want to be as good as him. And he won he got silver in the junior world championship in Porto. And I think that was like really, I thought that was really cool. And, now us being the best in the world, of course, maybe, it's also good for them to see that it's possible to come from Norway and to become a really good volleyball player, that they can believe that this is possible. And I don't know, it's strange because I still feel like a normal just a normal guy from Norway, from a small town in Norway, and I don't see myself as an Olympic champion at all. I just walk around and live my life, and they see me as this like big icon, and for me, that's not, I'm not thinking about it but when I go there, I of course feel a little responsible for doing or being a good role model for them. And it's a important thing to be aware of, but like everyday life, I'm not so aware.
Yeah, it also seems like when you're there, you try to go against this idolizing thing and sit down with the kids and talk to them a lot, and you always eat with them together and stuff like that. Is that just the thing you do, or is that also like with a plan to get down on the level of the students?
No, it's just the thing that we do. Like we're normal people, and we don't want to be any other than the people that we are. So it's really important for us to keep ourselves grounded and remember where we came from, and we know what Top Volley meant for us, and that's why it's also really important for us to be there and motivate the kids that are there. Maybe even have some sessions with them, because it's also fun for us. And we also see how much it gives the students, and how motivating that could be also just to, I don't know, play with us one day or play against us, just to feel the level a little bit. So we try to do this a lot. Show them that, we're regular people.
Yeah, that's really good. I think it's special because you don't have that in many other places in the world where it all comes together and the stars, if you will, come from the place and come back to the place. So that's a special construct, and you should hold on to that, I guess.
Yeah, we will.
To find a little segue into the present, or it's not really now the present, but to find the way to that, you talked about Christian being your idol also in school when you were younger. He's 2 years older than you, right? Mm-hmm. How did it come then that you partnered up? Because in the beginnings of your careers, if you can call it that, in the youth championships and stuff, you didn't play together, or at least didn't always play together.
So we... what my dad always tells us is that he partnered us up at Top Volley one time, and he could already see then that we were going to be a really good match and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know if I could believe that. It's easy to say now when we have actually become a good team. But like we teamed up at Top Volley. We had some trainings there. I was a rookie. I don't know if he even saw a talent in me then, because I was so short and skinny. I had the scales, but like no one could know that I would go, was going to be the player that I am today. I grew like when he went out of Top Volley. I became a completely other player because I got higher and I got stronger. So when he got back to Top Volley 2 years later, like he didn't even recognize me and like, who is this guy? Is this Anders? Like, what the hell happened? We got the chance playing together for the first time in Klagenfurt in 2016. We were teamed up to play the under-22 World Championship. No, European Championship. And that was just like going to be a little warm-up kind of to the European Championship in Greece. And we had no expectations whatsoever. And we were in the qualification and we met Denmark and Turkey, I think. And we won both those games quite okay. And then we were in the pool with Semenov and Krasilnikov, like the big team that went on, and they won they got fourth in the Olympics, I think, later that year. And also Alvaro Filho, I think, and a lot of great teams. So we beat all in the pool, which was like crazy. We were so happy and so satisfied. And then we were in the round two, already really satisfied. But we met, I think it was Hayden Bourne at that time. And they were so happy they had an easy draw against Norway, and it's going to be like, easy way to the quarterfinal. But then we beat them 2-0. They were really pissed, I think. Then we met Canada and we lost 15-13 in the tiebreak. We could have gone for the semifinal. Like it's crazy. So, that was our first tournament together. We had two sessions of training before that, and it was just like a click. So that's when we kind of realized that, okay, this is really special, and we felt so good together on the court and so relaxed. We went on and won the European championship, and then I decided to go indoor for a year and play in Belgium for an Olico Mosaic, and that decision I had already taken before this happened.
Yeah.
It was kind of difficult because I kind of wanted to continue with beach volleyball, but I also wanted to see what indoor volleyball was like, to become or be a part of the team and so on. So, in the end, it was a good decision because I learned a lot in Belgium, and I got back in the beach, and now we're here.
It worked out also. Yeah. It worked out okay. But this partnering up in Klagenfurt was the first one, right? Was that like an experiment to see if it would work, or did your usual partners don't have like they didn't have time, or why was that even why did you start together there
in Klagenfurt?
Yeah.
No, just because we wanted to have a tournament before the European Championship in Thessaloniki.
Yeah, okay, so, but why was that decision made for you to play together there then in Thessaloniki for this whole stretch? Was that like, let's try this out if this works?
Oh, yeah, it was just, we had a camp with, 5 athletes. In the end, me and the guest, then we made the draft for the, for the European Championship. And, yeah, we had some trainings. We tried some different constellations with me and Matthias, me and, Bjarne, like another player. And, we found out that me and Kristen was the best, connection. And then, then we played the 2 tournaments, and then we kind of stick together after that as well.
Yeah, wasn't that like, it wasn't a hard decision to decide that you were going to play together after that, right? Because it worked out so well.
Well, no, and he had a choice between me and Guy Reitun that was playing at that time. So he could have kind of not waited for me and played together with Geir, which was a more experienced guy at that time. But then, like, he wanted to wait for me when I got back from Belgium, and he wanted to play with me and not with with Geir. So that was a I respected that choice, and I was of course really happy about that. And then the 2017 season, we were only 3 athletes in the national team. It was me, Christian, and Matthias. So then we kind of rotated between the 3 of us. So I played with Matthias in Porik, for example, and I played with Christian in Gstaad. And then those 2 played together in the start of the season. And yeah, so that was kind of tricky. But in the end, Hendrik came back from Hawaii, and then we all could play together with partners.
Okay, so and now, how does the Beach Volley Vikings construct fit in there? Like, that was probably when Hendrik came back. Tell us the story. I think it's a good story also. So just tell us the story from the beginning.
Well, yeah, so the Beach Volley Vikings kind of, it started with me and Matthias. It was the 2 of us, and it was always me and Matthias who played in the youth ages. When we graduated from Top Volley, we had no program. It was no national team program. So we were kind of lost. What do we do now? And that's also why I chose to go indoor the first year, because I was uncertain of my future. And we kind of started our own group, and we didn't want to call ourselves team blah blah blah. We wanted to have like a special name. So we named ourselves the Beach Volley Vikings. We thought that was a fitting name. Just did a little brainstorm. My dad went out of the job that he had at Top Volley. My mom went out of the job that she had at Top Volley. And, we just all went in for this project without knowing that it was going to be a success. And, it was a big risk for all of us. And also, I went in with all my savings when I came back from Belgium, and the same did Matthias. So in the start, it was just like a big investment from ourselves to go to camps and to have a coach and blah blah. So yeah, later on, like the next year, we became the national team, because when the teams that tried to qualify for Rio, they didn't succeed. Everyone retired. So then we all of a sudden became the new national team, like the rookies that we were, with no points and whatsoever. We had to start from scratch. And Kristian had a little bit of points, but not that much. So we had to start in qualification. We always got in the tournaments, luckily. So we always managed to qualify. And then we had some good results. And then the next year we got some more budget from the federation, and it kind of started. And then we just, continued to call ourselves the Beach Volley Vikings. And, it's like a really family team because, my dad is included as the coach. And, you all know the story with Jetman being this assistant coach and father of Matthias. And my mom, she's kind of a mental coach for us. And Anette, she is doing all kinds of stuff when we're in Norway having camps there and just being like a mom for everyone. So, it's a really, really nice team, really nice family team. And we for sure couldn't have this have had this success without having their support in our backs and just the way that we started from the bottom with a lot of risk was quite quite unusual to do. Like it's no one does that kind of, and I'm just really happy that we succeeded and we can all be so proud of it now today when we have won the Olympic gold and had so much success. We kind of share it with everyone.
Yeah, so it's really unusual. So you really like went in with your private money, with your savings to do this dream project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really crazy.
We had to start with something. Like we didn't have anything. So we didn't have any sponsors or anything. And we just had to, like we believed so hard in this project that we had to do it.
Yeah, and also your parents believed and quit their jobs and so on. Also did some investment, right? If I remember correctly,
they did. Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone believed and got all in, really. So that's really, again, quite unbelievable, this story.
Yeah. And they my parents even put their, or put our house on hold, like the payments, so that we could actually travel and invest money in this project.
Yeah. It's again,
forever grateful for them to do that.
Yes, again, it's all going towards your inspirational speaker career. Yeah. This story is just one of a kind, really. I asked my Instagram followers for some questions for you, and of course I got some, and we're going to go through them a little bit. Some are like short answers, some maybe a little longer. Before that, I want to apologize for everyone whose question I can't ask because there were really many.
Yeah, okay.
Seems like people are interested in what you do.
That's good.
So I can't ask everyone's question, but I try to select some good ones. So one that came often really is like, how famous are you in Norway? Do people in the street know you?
Well, some recognize me, but I'm actually not that famous in Norway because volleyball in Norway is not the biggest sport. So I think I'm more famous in Germany than I'm than in Norway.
If you walk through like, Germany, do you like are people on the street like calling you out?
Well, I've experienced it in Italy. And also now in Tenerife, a waiter, like, congrats with the Olympics, like, we watched you. But it happens, of course, that they stop me here in Kristiansand on the street and they want to have a picture. But it's not, no, I'm not that famous. It's not that I have to, like, hide myself or anything.
Disguising and I think it's just having fun. Having a disguise and bodyguards, so okay.
Yeah, nothing. It's not Michael Jordan or anything.
Okay, not yet at least. Okay, another question that came in, like, who on tour, who don't you like playing at all? Like a defender that can read you or a blocker that can read you very well, or an attacker that you can't read or something like that?
Well, in general, I don't like to play against people that shot a lot because I can't block that many balls. That sucks. But I don't like playing against Tolle Wickler, for example. I've never liked playing against them because they're, yeah, a really great team. I'm not just saying that because you're German.
It's me, yeah.
And I think also like Ehlers and Wickler is going to be a very dangerous team to play against now. They're very like unpredictable, and you don't know what they're going to do. I like more predictable players that hit hard. Like Krasilnikov, I kind of like playing against him because he hits so freaking hard, and it's kind of easy to sometimes see where he wants to go. Braumusen, we've always had troubles with them. Now we've kind of locked up the code. Boomans de Groot, they did a great job in the European Championship this year, last year. So, yeah, there's a lot of good teams, but yeah, in general, we love to play against them because it's fun.
It's just fun to play. It's good. Yeah. Where you just said about Tolle Wickler, that was also a question. When you heard about Julius Tolle's farewell and that he steps back, did you like have thoughts at all? Like, okay, that's a thing you can do. Is that in your mind that it's somehow or at some time a possibility to also step back?
I think it was quite early, or it was too early for him. Like, he had so many good years in beach volleyball, it's a shame that he won't be there on the tour, sharing his positivity. But I respect his choice. It's not beach volleyball. It's not a very economic life, like in terms of. Having sponsors and getting prize money, and that's your living. It's not a very you don't have that many savings after your career yet. Hopefully we'll get there.
Yeah.
But right now it's not super giving in terms of economics. But yeah, we will miss him. But it's a shame. He was such a good player, and he was talented. I wish him the best of luck, of course, with his new life.
Yeah, but for him, I think it was the main reason was that he he noticed that he was missing out on so many private things also, that where he was having fun with friends and family and whatsoever. Maybe that's not even such a big thing for you, because mm-hmm. You have your family around, and you have also a little bit of free time. You live at home, and Julius has to. He is from Hamburg, but he's on the centralization aspect there, and has to train a lot. Maybe that's also an aspect why he, stepped back.
Yeah. Okay. I see. But come on, this beach volleyball. you're living on the beach.
It's
like,
so
I mean, it's the best job you can have ever. But that's my. That's my point of view, but he has to do whatever he wants to, and if he kind of sets hanging out with friends higher than working on the beach, that's like his choice, and people are different, so yeah.
Maybe we'll see him again.
Hopefully. Hopefully.
Another question we got, or I got, rather. Did you play any other sports when you were younger, or still do, or something like that?
I was quite active when I was younger. I played football like everyone until I was in the ninth grade when I moved. I even did trumpet, I think, trampoline for a little while. I did some parkour with my friends in Strandvik just for fun. I did some hip hop dancing. Went to some courses, but nothing like, yeah. So, I was very active when I was younger, and I like to, move my body, but yeah, none of those skills have kind of like my football skills, they disappeared when I grew. My okay. dancing skills disappeared when I grew. So the only thing I have left is my backflip.
yeah, I wanted to say that because like trampoline and parkour and hip hop, they all are sports where you have like a lot of feeling for your body. Maybe yeah. that helped a little bit.
Yeah, blocking also. I think so. Like eye and hand coordination is, yeah, well, not. No, well, coordination. That's what yeah. I got from that. Yeah, yeah.
yeah. So kids, do hip hop and then you'll become a good blocker.
For sure.
I have two questions left. The one of them is, what do you like better, Vienna or Hamburg? It's always the same question because people want to see you slip up, I guess.
I have to say that I prefer Vienna. I'm sorry, but it's special. Of course, Hamburg is also special. But I've been more to Vienna. I've only experienced Hamburg twice, and Vienna. I also experienced Klagenfurt. The vibe in Vienna it's special, and the way that it's arranged, and I think like all the side events for the fans, and that's really special. So I hope that never dies out. I just really hope that we can continue that party in Vienna and also in Hamburg for sure. And I think Hamburg maybe even has more potential than Vienna has, and I really enjoy playing in the Rutenbaum Stadium. It's really, really cool to play inside tennis arenas. Like it's kind of built for beach volleyball too, so all the noise is locked in one place. But I think the reason why I'm not saying Hamburg is because I still have bad dreams about the semifinal against Paula Wickler.
Yeah, I have good dreams about that, but like the Vienna topic has been talked about a lot already. And it's going to be talked about in the future a lot, I guess. That is just special there. The question that I really got the most is a question about, or let me rephrase it, like people ask themselves, now you've won almost everything or won the ultimate goal with the Olympic gold medal. How do you motivate yourself to go on, and what are the goals that you do? Because I also remember your father telling me when I was in Sun that like he was really concerned and thinking about what he's going to do to keep you, like to give you a challenge to keep you on your feet, kind of. So what do you do about that?
No, like, it's actually no problem for us at all. We still love the sport. We still want to become better players. And the sport is moving forward with also Sweden now doing jump setting and doing more on second ball. Like I think beach volleyball in 5 years will be completely different from beach volleyball today. So like, we want to continue to develop ourselves. Like I'm not done yet. I have so much left to learn, and so many skills left to learn. And and we never want to lose. Like we hate losing. So that's also a goal. Like to be as good as we can, so we don't lose games when we're playing again. Because that's a shitty feeling. Like I'm a bad loser, and. We still have the world championship title left. Now we have a chance for it this summer, which will be really cool in Rome. So, I think we're really motivated, and I get that people ask that question, and, we have won so much, and, it's quite unusual for our age and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like, it's not a challenge for us at all. We're going to go at it like every year. And, we just love to play so much that, this never gets boring.
And do you like set certain goals or specific goals, either as a team or for yourself, like saying, okay, we want to get another gold, or we want to win the world championships? Or is it really about, okay, we want to get better or implement this and that?
Well, like after Olympics in Tokyo, I kind of immediately said, like, let's do this again. I want to do this again. But yeah. Now, next time with audience, because yeah. It's kind of... Yeah. It was really strange winning the Olympics, and like, where is the people? Like, yeah, where is all the cheering? And we only had a small group from Norway that was able to watch the game, and of course that was fun to cheer a little with them. But it's supposed to be a party, and it's supposed to be audience watching, and it felt kind of. Of course, it's a lot of people watching on television and so on, but it's just playing in front of people. That's the magic. That's where, that's where all the good moments are from. Like when we played in Hamburg and in Vienna and Gstaad and all those big arenas, it's that brings the goosebumps. And it's those moments that we really live for and train for. And yeah, so... Yeah, we want to do that again in Paris, but with audience. So that's also something that no one has ever done before, like winning two gold medals. It's only Kerry Walsh on the women's side, but no one else. So that's also a big goal.
Okay, so yeah, that'll keep you busy, I guess. That's good. sure. So we arrived a little bit in the present, or in the last 2 years. Which started off with you being injured again, right? Your hip injury. Tell us about that. How did it happen? And yeah, how did it affect you?
Well, I was so stupid. I played indoor 1 year, so that's how it kind of happened. I played the cup final in Norway, and I got so many sets. I jumped so many times during that game. I had jump serves, I had blocking, and I think I had 70 sets in that game, which is
it's an unbelievable number. Yeah.
I was completely. I had overused my right leg a lot, and it was completely cramping, and it was bad. The day after, we went to Tenerife to start the training camp, and I tried to practice the first day, but like I was not able to because my right leg was collapsing. Like it was like I tried to step on it and put some weight on it, but it collapsed. So then I had to wait a couple of days, and then I tried again. 3-4 days later, and the same happened. So it was I was not able to practice on it. And then I went back to Norway, did some checkups on it, and we tried to find a plan and just like slowly tried to get it back in shape by lifting some weights and doing some easy workouts in the sand, not doing that deep workouts. And that helped a little bit. And when we reached summer in 2020, I was able to play the European Championship. But then after the European Championship, it was also bad. And then the problem had kind of gotten to the hip. So it kind of went from going having pain in the hip to having cramps in the leg, and it went like up and down. And we kind of still haven't really solved the problem, but now we have signed a German physio and strength coach. He has been working with the ladies in black, Hannes. He is with us now, and he's doing a good job on my hip, and now I'm just doing booty workouts to make sure I strengthen my booty, because my booty is too weak. So that's the, the theory that we're working on right now. So hopefully that will work. And it already feels a little better. So I hope I can be ready for 2022 and not have any injuries this year.
Yeah. So for you, it wasn't so bad that the Olympics were postponed for a year.
Well, it was not a bad thing. I think I would have, of course, I would have played anyway, but I wouldn't have had that good of a load up or preparation to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, for me, it was actually quite good that it was postponed. But I think 2020, we would have done good there as well, because we were in such a good shape, and our minds were a little bit more, we felt good. We had a lot of confidence. We had a lot of confidence. Yeah.
It's very good. But then 2021 started, and it started off with a Cancun tournament, which you won two of them. Yeah. I believe. And then started a stretch of tournaments where you struggled a little bit, and where teams figured out, okay, let's we've tried Christian for some time, let's try Anders, serving Anders, and you having to play some side out. Like, how was that for you, this transition to having to play side out and then ultimately climaxing in the Olympics and European Championships, where you figured out how that works?
No, it was difficult. I had problems with my leg in that period too, and I couldn't really jump when I got served, and I had to block and I had to jump serve, and the load on my quad was too high, so my quad was really just set out, and of course there's also some difficulties with the rhythm within the team, because I was used to set a lot, and I was confident in that, but when I got served, I also had to face that and have all the pressure on myself to put those balls, and in the start it shook me. And it was difficult to have that pressure, and also when I didn't feel good in my body, it also that pressure became a little bit bigger, it got a little bit better. The first tournament in Sochi was disaster, and then Ostrava was a little bit better, but still I didn't feel good. And then we had a little break, then we had a tournament in Gstaad where things kind of got a little better. We had some good games, but things didn't feel like our confidence was not at the top for sure. But we got a fifth, and we lost against Stojanovski and Kosinnikov in the quarterfinal, which was, we were really disappointed and frustrated, and I remember I was really I was down in that period, because it was hard not playing the beach volleyball that I knew that I could, and I didn't, it was a lot of talks with Christian and my girlfriend too, she helped me a lot, and my family, just how could I all of a sudden not be the same Anders that I used to be. That was, it was some troubles. And also I took that with me in the Olympics. The first games there were terrible, against, Australia, against Spain. I played shit. We managed to win both of them, luckily. And in the end, or the last game in the pool was against Semenov and Leshukov, which is a better team than Australia and Spain, and we lost, but still we felt things were moving a little bit forward. But I remember I cried in the Olympics after winning against Spain, because I felt so bad, because I wanted to perform my best, and I wanted to it's now or never. Like, it's the Olympics. This is now, you have to perform. And I felt like I wasn't performing, and I was so upset, and I was so disappointed, and really like annoyed with my own performance, that I just had to like let those tears out and open up to Christian and the team, Kåre and Jetmund. I went in the park, in the Olympic park, and I just went for a walk, sat down, tried to like get all the bad thoughts out there, think about how I played before, and how the rhythm was before, and try to like get myself back in the head, confidence wise. And then we had a really good game against Braunhusen. I think that also changed everything, because then we started believing, and things felt a little more right. We got a second chance against Semenov and Leshukov, and we beat them. Finally, like, show them that we're the better team. That was really good for ourselves, but also the people, that we had a lot of pressure from Norway, like, you're going to take this medal easily. So, and then, the rest is history, because we played really good in the final and the semifinal.
So yeah, maybe crying and letting it all out helped a lot.
For sure.
To relieve the pressure.
Yeah, I don't think if I wouldn't have been so open to my teammates and to my team, it wouldn't have been possible. Because I was struggling, but I needed help. Like, I needed their support.
And do you have any like, you have your team that you talk to, and you have your own techniques, like walking through the park, which is also like helping probably, but about like many teams now take real like mental coaching and sports psychologists to help them. Do you have anything of that sort?
Well, we have Mom. She's been in the Olympics herself, so she knows what she's talking about. And she knows the pressure and how to deal with it, and so on. So, for the first couple of years in Beach Volley Vikings, we kind of started these mental sessions where we relax, go into our head, and try to picture ourselves doing good things, and also picture ourselves on targets, and maybe, try to like lock that in our mind. And also, if we are feeling bad, we try to go inside our head and kind of throw those in the garbage. Like, I feel like that helps when I'm in trouble, and it feels good to just process that inside your own head. And it's for sure like a training thing, so you have to do it many times to be able to picture yourself things and stuff like that. So Mom has helped a lot with that, but now we kind of use it ourselves.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. but it, I think, or I imagine it might be hard sometimes to have this like mental coaching or something from a family member, that you might like, it's maybe different if it's another person that's not as involved or something like that. Like, many teams do it.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about getting like outside help? Sounds like you have a big psychological problem, but like having a mental coach.
Like, don't fix anything that ain't broken. So I think, I think we kind of, are doing a good job there already, and like, we want to be really picky with the people that we work with and people that we bring inside the team, because the things that we are doing right now is working so well that,
yeah,
of course there is a lot of people that want to help us and with this and blah blah, but you have to choose what's relevant. And for us, this is not relevant right now. Maybe it will be in a couple of years, but right now we're good with what we have.
So we were in the Olympics that you took the gold medal from. Right after that were the European Championships in Vienna, where you then also played and were notably a bit tired. Like other teams, like maybe on the women's side, Heidrich Vergé-Desprez, who've won bronze, they just pulled out of the tournament and they didn't play. But you guys did to take away this fourth consecutive medal, gold medal for the European Championships. Would you do that again in this way? Or like was it worth it? And would you do it again?
It was definitely worth it, then we would do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were really tired, of course. But we tried to like save energy, not showing any emotions. It was maybe really boring watching us play, but like we tried to make our game speak for us and not our emotions, because we had to save the energy that we, the little energy that we had, because of course it's always a blowout going through the Olympics with all the experiences and so on, and especially when you're winning it, like it's there's a lot of people that wants to talk to you and things that happens after Olympic gold medals. So it was a big media pressure, or like media wanted to get the whole of us, and at the same time we're also trying to focus on the European Championship and try to forget about the Olympics, because now we have to focus on the next tournament. So that was a process, and that was for sure really difficult. And also like our bodies were kind of beaten up after the Tokyo heat, but we felt good, like playing wise we felt really good, we felt motivated, and our confidence was back on the top after winning the Olympics. We for sure had some pressure on us winning the fourth title and so on. But yeah, we just had to do it because we wanted that fourth title and go past Reinder Numedor. So that felt good. But yeah, so that's why we did it.
You had a lot of close games also in this tournament, and games where you were behind a lot. That because of your like tired bodies, or again, were you back in that good mental place where you had the confidence, like you said? And it was just because of the bodies, or was there something else that was responsible for that?
No, I think it was more the bodies, actually, this time. We felt good, both of us. And we did drop a lot of sets in the European Championship, but we managed to win in the end. And we dropped a lot of first sets, which we, I don't know, we kind of normally not do. So that's always really, when you're tired, you lose the first set and it's like, oh damn, we have to go through two sets to win now. So that's not something you want when you're already really exhausted. But like, we wanted to win, like we didn't want to lose, and we wanted to push, and for sure we dig deep to get energy, and we try to dig everything we had. And I think I was even more tired than Christian, because I also had more responsibility in inside out through this tournament, and my knee didn't also, or my leg didn't feel that good after the whole tournament. So after the final, I could barely walk on my leg because it was collapsing when I was bending it. So, but we won, so it was worth it in the end, and it was a really fun experience to play in front of a big crowd again. And I think that also helped us a lot, just having the supporters supporting us, and felt good.
And how do you figure? Did you manage to win this, or? Again, if you like behind, you were like behind a lot, and sometimes big amounts of points. So, like, how do you do that? It can't just be your level of playing. It's a lot more like it's in the head or something. Do you like, is it just liking winning? So what could you tell others? How do you manage to do that?
No, I think we're just really patient in our play, and we trust the way that we're playing, that like we're gonna get them, we're gonna get some points. We're like we try to be relaxed, even though we know we're behind some points. This is beach volleyball, and the momentum can change whenever. So when we are confident, I think it's easier for us to also believe in the way that we are playing. That okay, this is normal. We like just it will come. Just let it flow, and then we just try to stick to our side out. Don't do that much mistakes there, and then we have to try to push and believe in our block system, the block defense system. Yeah, so it's all about patience, I think, and just believing in our own play.
So that's okay. That's your way to win, and maybe what's a little bit special about playing. But let's talk for a moment about what maybe is special about the way you train and practice and do live this whole beach volleyball thing. Like from your first impression of that question, like what's special about the way you do things in your team?
I think what makes us so special and what has also shaped us as players today is that when we go on trainings, we always try to do our best, even though it's a warm-up game or if it's another stupid game with points. Like, we always want to win. So we've had a lot of discussions about points and rules and stuff like that. But it kind of triggers us to be the best versions of ourselves on trainings. And yeah, we have to, of course, applaud Jetman and Kåre to bring out the best of us. But
they do a lot of games, right? They have a lot of games up their sleeves.
We do a lot of games. We do a lot of playing, like a lot of playing where we, I have the Norwegian word, but like situations that also can show up in the game. So we try to do most of that, which also makes it fun, because if you're only gonna do one technique and just focus about that, like, that's also boring. So I know how to set, I know how to do those skills, but the most important skills is to do the correct skills to the correct time. Like, the for example, Christian, he's an expert in that. Like, he does exactly the right decision in the right time, in the right situation. Like, he doesn't have like the strongest spikes or like the best shots or whatever, but he does what's best for the situation. And that's why it's so difficult to catch him, because he's such a smart beach volleyball player. And yeah. So I have a lot to learn from him, and maybe I can show him some things. But he's like the brain.
Yeah, that's really special things about the team. I think so too. What's also, I think, a little special, if you look like the contrast of how we do it in Germany. In Germany, we right now have like all of the training staff and teams centered in Hamburg. Mm-hmm. And if you want to play, like for the most of the teams, if you want to play and be a national team, you have to come to Hamburg to do so and train there. Like, and they live there also. Like, but you guys don't even live in the same city, right, Christian and you?
No, we don't. And right now, when we're home from Tenerife, we don't practice. So he stays in Oslo, I stay here, and we're kind of chill about it, which is nice. So, yeah, and also when we're at Top Volley, we're a big team. Like, we're Team Norway, and we practice with even the Top Volley students, because we want to also shape the beach volleyball players of tomorrow. So it's important to also think that way and to be a team and not do like, for example, Brazil, where they practice with Evandro in Ipanema, and they have, I don't know, Alisson in Victoria, or like the all the players are on different locations training individually, which is very strange.
Yeah, so I thought something more was coming. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
to make it clear, you do like more little camps. Like you live at home and then you go to, for a week, you go training in Tenerife or in Top Volley. And in the meantime, you just are at home. You do weights, of course, but you don't touch the ball so much. And, of course, don't practice together then.
No.
That works too, it seems.
It does. Yeah. It's a really relaxed, since we're a family, we can be open and honest with each other, and we can be understandable for each other's time. And now I have the chance to be with my girlfriend and also do strength, which is the most important for me. And then Kirsten is doing whatever he wants to do. Of course, we're doing strength training, which is important, but what he does with his time is not my concern. And I just believe the best for him is to have fun and be with friends, and because we can't only be locked in with the volleyball all the time, because then we're gonna be sick of it.
Yeah, that it sometimes happens here in Germany, where people go to this centralized place and then they go back home because they just can take all of the input and just can focus like 100% all the time.
Yeah.
So might be worth looking at that again, so it works like this too.
For sure.
I have one last thing for you, because I noticed like in Germany and all over the world, usually like have some kind of education that they do next to their sport. Like right now in Germany, most of them are studying something. It takes a while usually because they don't have so much time. But you don't know such thing, right? You have your like your graduation from Top Volley high school, if you will. But that's it, right? You just focus 100% on your pro career.
Yeah, luckily we are so privileged that we can do that and not think about studies. Maybe 10 years I'll be regretting that, but we will see. Hopefully I can shape my future career with the things that I'm doing today, and with the context that we are also getting today. Like we, through sports, we also get a lot of contacts and possibilities, and we also for sure got a lot of like life knowledge that's also always useful. We're also kind of our own booking company with planning camps and buying tickets and hotels and Airbnbs and blah blah blah. So like you do a lot of things as a beach volleyball player that can be used in many different jobs, I believe. So, and we're also our own social media company and marketing company. So there is a lot to beach volleyball, and I really like that. It's not only about being players and becoming better players, but we also want to do good on other platforms. So, it's a nice everyday life.
But it sounds a little bit like you like think about this sometimes, what you do after your active career, or do you not like think about that at all?
Well, yeah, I do. I try to. I think it's important to think about, okay, what could I see myself do in 10 years when it's not about beach volleyball. But I haven't figured the answer to that yet, so I need some more time.
Yeah, you can play a little bit longer, I guess.
hopefully my body will hold out.
Let's hope so. So, Anders, thank you very much. That was it. I think this was the longest episode that I ever did. So sorry for that.
I'm a big talker, so that's I should be sorry for it.
That's very good. So for the listeners, follow me on Instagram. Follow Anders if you don't do so already. But I don't think he needs the help, if I'm honest. But do it anyways. And you can rate this podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, I guess. And if you want to support anymore, then my PayPal link is in the show notes. And for that, Anders, because you probably don't know this podcast, the guest always has the last word, so you can say whatever you want, address something you want, or just say goodbye. And for me, it's goodbye, and thank you very much.
Okay. So, thank you, Max, for the great talk. And I think there is some things that people can take out from this podcast and learn from. So the biggest thing is to in terms of beach volleyball, to have fun and always try to challenge yourself and become a little bit better every day. Be the best you can be in any given moment. That's kind of a quote that I've been living for in many years. So maybe you can take that with you through this day or this week or even this year. But with that being said, thank you for being on this podcast, and we'll see you guys in Hamburg hopefully soon.